This is VizTechTalk.com with Dan Kelson. Today I'm speaking with Bruno Gisani, who has a blog, Lunch Over IP, www.lunchoverip.com, which is a fascinating blog, all sorts of great stuff on there. Actually, part of the reason I found Bruno, I'm not sure how I originally found him, but since I've been diving in the innovation space, somehow I ended up over at Lunch Over IP, saw a interview that he had done with a fellow in Cambridge who was also Swiss, Bruno is Swiss, who is with CHAIR, the Swiss House for Advanced Research and Education. It's in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm in Boston. That caught my eye, so now I started talking to Pascal and realized I should hop back to where I found the original source and speak with Bruno as well. Bruno is a writer for Business Week Online. He's the European director of the TED conferences, which is Technology, Entertainment, and Design, and is a conference that someday I've absolutely got to get to. It just has never lined up that I could get there, but this sounds like an amazing conference, chock full of just incredible thinkers from a global stage and technology and politics and all sorts of things. Hopefully we'll get to talk about a little bit about that. He's the author of several books, frequent public speaker. He lives in Switzerland. I think what's nice about this discussion that we'll have is I tend to be U.S.-centric, and that's a problem with Americans in general. So I'm trying to break out of that and make sure that I'm aware of what's going on in the global stage. And that's part of the main reason why I had gotten in touch with Bruno. Bruno, if you could give a little bit more background about, you know, what do you do, what have you done in the past, and then we'll get into the topic we had chosen was global innovation, the good and bad, because not everything is perfect in this world, so we need to know what to watch out for, and that you can certainly sort of dig holes for yourselves in the innovation world and maybe other things that we can pop out of that. So if you could give a little background, and thanks again for your time today.
My pleasure. Well, generally you find me somewhere either on a plane or an airport at a conference or visiting some strange, odd labs and research centers and companies.
Right.
I've been working for the last 15, 17 years at the intersection of technology, innovation, design, and social and political issues.
Okay.
And so mostly about the impact of technology on all the rest. And I've deployed this into writing. You mentioned the book and the blogs and the articles I've written for about 25 different publications in the world, from the New York Times to the Herald Tribune to publications in Switzerland, Italy, France, and other countries.
Okay.
As well as organizing conferences, speaking at conferences, and other similar things. I've also started a couple of companies in the internet field in the past.
Okay. Now, the title we had chosen was Global Innovation, the Good and Bad, and, you know, I have somewhat of a global picture. But then again, part of the reason that we're talking is I feel like I'm not talking about it enough, and I don't think, to my sense, I don't see other people talking about enough what is innovation on the global stage, and we'll be talking about what is innovation, period, during this conversation. But since your background is Switzerland, as people may recall, is a nice neutral ground where it's, you know, it's kind of a connecting sort of area of the world. And I think that's part of what is fascinating to me about you and the things that you've done, all the writing and speaking, participating in organizing the TED conference. What are some of the good and bad things that you've seen, you know, whether it's from a national standpoint?
This idea that innovation is basically only about technology and is basically only about big things.
Right.
You create something extraordinary and, you know, create a market or break another one and become rich fast.
Right.
And it's all about what comes out of the United States.
Yes. Right?
That's basically the general picture of innovation. We have the reality is that there's a tremendous amount of innovation going on elsewhere. Innovation doesn't need to be big and doesn't need to be only about technology. Innovation is, for my definition, is everything that helps adding value or creating a better service for your customer. So it can be a very tiny thing. If
sure.
It saves, you know, minutes or hours of time to your customer, or if it gets a product that's more reliable and easy to use to your customer, for example.
Right.
And certainly it's not only about, you know, something that's completely breakthrough. There is incremental innovation that's also very significant, and actually is more significant than the other one. So.
Yes, right.
But
so,
just to give you an example, you know, I live in Lausanne, which is in the French part of Switzerland, and if I just scan mentally the one-hour drive radius around me, you find the place where the World Wide Web was invented,
right,
which is just down the road in Geneva. The same place, they're now building the biggest particle accelerator in the world, which promises some interesting breakthrough in particle physics, actually particularly answering the last open question of the standard model of particle physics, which is about where does mass come from? and they will start, they'll be building it for a couple of years, and they will start operating it at the end of the year.
Okay.
Not far from here, to about 20 minutes from where I am now, they are developing a project to create a solar plane that would tour the world powered only by solar energy.
Okay, wow.
And that's a pretty interesting one because it would be flying, you know, day and night and with a pilot on board and this kind of things without any other source of energy than solar sun rays.
Wow.
And in the other direction, up north, they are developing human-machine interfaces and things like that. So this is a very tiny region. It's, you know, literally a one-hour drive scan around where I am. And yet there is some major world, globally valuable innovation going on.
Right.
And that's just to say that there is significant innovation going on outside of the U.S. in terms of research, in terms of new technologies, in terms of new approaches, etc.
In the hour or so I spent with Pascal over at Share, he'd given me a number of publications talking about Swiss innovation. Obviously, that's his job. And flipping through a book that he gave me, I was just stunned at all of the things that have come out of Switzerland. That
and we can have the same discussion for other European countries, by
sure,
the way.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Mentioning this because I live here, but you know, we can start talking about what's happening in Cambridge, UK, or what's happening in southern France, and we would have similar examples.
Right. Well, you know, I've been in the search, you know, enterprise search world, commercial search world for 13 years now, and it's interesting to me how much that people are primarily not even aware of that's coming out of France, typically, or French-speaking people in computational linguistics, mm-hmm. which really makes search a lot smarter, way beyond what Google would normally do for you out of the box, even though I use Google all day long. There is a lot going on the global stage, and you know, also, I mean, I live in Boston, so it always frustrates me, even though I like what's going on in Silicon Valley, there's plenty that's happening in my area, too, that just doesn't get as much press as it could, since all the glory goes to the West Coast. But
yeah, mostly.
Yeah. So so on the global stage, talking about big innovation, I call it big I innovation and small I innovation. So there's the big bang, you know, you're a genius, you're a Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, whatever. There's the smaller innovation, which people don't think counts all that much, where you're just continuously improving, but to me it's still innovation. On the global stage, what are some of the things that you've perhaps seen that are impediments to innovation, you know, whether it be in China or Europe or any other place?
Well, mostly the same things that are advantages and that can be leveraged for innovation are also at the same time problems. One of the big advantages of American innovation, of course, is the big monolinguistic domestic market,
mm-hmm.
Which allows for a company to launch something and if the product or service is good, to scale up very fast.
Right.
And this is accompanied by a whole infrastructure of companies servicing that company, providing, you know, everything from legal service to outsourcing to staffing and so on, as well as from a media system that tends to identify the interesting things and magnify them. Once
sure.
once you get a story in, you know, Wired magazine or the New York Times or Newsweek,
right.
Somehow the whole world sees you, right?
Right. Yeah.
And knows about you. If you get a story into the biggest Swiss magazine, the whole Switzerland sees you, and that's it.
Right.
So you have a problem there. So
right.
For the other countries, it's exactly the opposite. They have to break out of their country, they have to go international in order to be seen somehow on the global scale.
Right.
So that's an advantage for the U.S. and is a disadvantage for smaller countries, and particularly countries where English is not the national language.
Right.
But then you can turn it around and understand that innovation is also very much tied to local political, social, and cultural conditions. European countries, on the other side, have some advantages by the fact, for example, that going international for them is easy because they are multilingual and internationally minded from the start.
Right.
For an American company, it's not that easy.
Right.
Right. There is this old say about, we used to say here in Europe, oh yeah, this startup from California wanted to come from Europe and opened an office in London and they thought that they were in Europe.
Right.
And they're not exactly being in Europe. You know, there is a lot of similarities between the reality in London and the reality in Boston or San Francisco. And then suddenly you cross the channel and you get into France or Germany and you find a completely different reality that you're not prepared for.
Right.
So that's clearly an advantage for Europeans or probably even Asian, and a disadvantage for America. Same thing can be said about, Andrew's example, but about political conditions. If you think of stem cell research right now, for example, is hindered in many ways in the United States because of the political situation there, and
Right. It's
much more advanced and much more aggressive in other countries where legislation is much more open.
Right, and that's, you know, if you apply that to just innovation thinking in general, sort of the way that you foster innovation, regardless of political situations in a country or even a locality, you know, inside an organization, there are certain, you know, cultural rules that you're expected to abide by. And that's why companies feel the need to fire up a Skunk Works or something that's sort of a rogue vehicle that lets them sort of run free. And without the rules and all the expectations on, you know, immediate cash generation or whatever it happens to be, so that they can actually make some progress and not be bogged down by all the sort of overhead that they would normally be.
Yeah, and that, the same way it applies from country to country, it applies from company to company as well. Now everybody is looking at Google as being, you know, having found the ultimate way to manage in-house innovation and, you know, letting people work one day a week on their own project.
Right.
And if the project works well, then, you know, putting a team behind it and maybe some resources and go to stage one and to stage two and then release it as a beta if it works, and if it catches some public, then push it even further and these kind of things. Plus many other things that Google is doing. Google is also a very specific kind of company. The company didn't exist 10 years ago, so they don't have a gigantic history. They don't have a lot of luggage in terms of fixed investments in infrastructure, these kind of things, beyond the data centers.
Right.
But basically, their products are completely virtual, so they're easy to send to the market, test, update, change, modify, and these kind of things. You cannot do the same with a car, right? You can put up a new Google beta something, but you can't put on the street, you know, a Mercedes beta, frankly.
Right.
It would be a bit of a problem. So
Right. It
really depends also on not only the market you are, but how your company is structured and what's the nature of your product at the end. And that determines also the way you can manage innovation.
How about something from the recent TED conference? Anything new? I'm sure tons of new things popped out from that. Anything that you think would apply directly?
There were a couple of things that I think are relevant to the discussion.
Okay.
One is, for example, the fact that a lot of innovation is now coming out of the users themselves.
Sure.
Right? The custom, what we used to call the audience, the users, the customers, the clients, whatever name you use to define them, they are increasingly pushing innovation or creating innovative things, particularly innovative usage of products that others have designed for other purposes and just, you know, passing them on and distributing them among themselves and so on.
Okay.
That's certainly one element that has been discussed already over and over in the last few years, from user-generated content to the prosumer to the blurring borders between amateurs and professionals and this kind of thing, the pro-ams and this kind of things.
Sure, right, and the crowdcasting and crowdsourcing and all that.
Exactly. But another thing that was interesting to me is listening to speakers talking about what happens in developing countries, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And by developing countries, I'm not talking about China and India. I'm talking about Africa.
Yep.
Right? What happens in Africa, where you discover suddenly that a country like Ghana has cell phone services that are probably more innovative and more advanced than the one, in any case, than the one that are available in the U.S. and probably also in the ones that we have in Europe.
Right.
You can pay at the grocery store with your cell phone today in Ghana.
Oh, wow.
Or you can transfer funds from your account to my account.
Mm-hmm.
Through your cell phone, for example. These are two services that are not available today in the U.S. nor in Europe. Or maybe as a test in some Scandinavian countries, I don't know.
Right.
Why this is happening? Because it really serves a specific local purpose, which is, if I can pay at the grocery store with my cell phone, it means that the grocery store owner doesn't need to have cash in the grocery store.
Right.
Right. So there is no risk of robbery.
Right.
At the same time, he gets the money directly into the account, and therefore it has immediate cash flow rather than just giving me the product and then they promise to come back and pay tomorrow or this kind
sure.
of things.
Right.
So it serves a specific purpose, and therefore it encourages the local telecom companies to innovate and answer and fulfill this need. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a lot of innovation going on in the streets themselves. You can go around a city in Kenya and in the street you will find someone that has a bucket full of components of a cell phone and they can assemble a cell phone for you for $10.
Wow.
Right? Things like that. So there are interesting things happening in places that we usually don't look at.
Right.
I think that this is one of the interesting things that came out of TED this year. And this is not even to talk about all the sector we call social entrepreneurship, which has also a tremendous amount of innovation happening in creating ways to solve specific problems that have to do with education in places where there is none and where there are no resources. Or how do we irrigate fields in places where there is basically no water or almost none,
right?
And so on, right?
Right, right. Yeah, and I've known about the Grameen Foundation for a long time, and then there's the Heifer organization, which is tied into both those sort of concepts on microeconomics and making effective use of resources, too.
Yeah. I don't know, just to give you a couple of examples, there is a group in San Francisco called Kickstart, which actually is based in San Francisco but operates in Africa.
Okay.
And the thing they develop are water pumps that are operated manually,
mm-hmm.
and allow African farmers to better irrigate their fields. Right?
Okay.
But an African farmer cannot spend, $1,500 on a pump like a Kentucky farmer can.
Right.
So they have been developing, finding ways to create a pump that can be manufactured and sold for something like $25 or $15.
Wow.
Which is something that the poorest countries cannot afford, but just those just a little bit above can.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, this is an investment that turns the farmer into an entrepreneur. And then, with proceeds buys a second pump and expands its fields and these kind of things. And there is a sort of virtuous circle that is created just because the technology has been rethought in order to create something that's reliable, but also cheap to manufacture and can be put on the market for an affordable price. The issue is not donating the pump. The issue is creating a pump that can be operated with local condition at a price that can be paid within local conditions.
Right.
And I think that this is a great example of innovation, for example. Another one which I've not yet looked at in detail, but I just heard about it. There is another group in Africa who discovered that a certain species of rats have the ability to sniff landmines.
Hmm.
I don't know if they sniff the metal or the plastics or if they sniff the explosive.
Sure.
But in any case, apparently they have the capacity to be trained to sniff landmines. And because they're not heavy enough, even if they walk above the landmine, they will not explode.
Huh.
Right? So there is a small company who is a commercial company who sells the services who trains these rats to sniff landmines.
Wow.
Right? This is another example of innovation.
Right.
Right. Tremendous innovation that can make a tremendous difference in people's lives in places where there used to be a civil war and therefore there are fields full of mines, right?
Right. So it doesn't do you any good if you can finally afford a pump to irrigate your field if your field's full of landmines.
For example, yeah.
Right.
These are just two examples out of thousands that we can discuss.
Right.
Goes back again to the issue of innovation is really locally focused because it heavily depends on the local conditions. But of things that are not happening in the U.S., nor in Europe, nor in China, India, or Japan, but in the rest of the world.
Right. Well, that's really interesting. Okay. Yeah. Why don't we wrap it up on that? Because,
sure.
We could talk about this all day long. I think there's just a huge untold story about what's happening in innovation, period.
Yep.
I think it's just not well understood. Global innovation, I think there's just a lot of room to understand that this is something that drives me crazy. I mean, we do work with huge organizations that are, hundreds of thousands of employees and maybe global. But there's also, on the commercial side, there's sort of a taint for people that target the small to medium business, which could be, one person to, depends on where you cut it off, but 5,000 people, 10,000 people. And there's sort of an elitism there that you're not successful, just like you're not an innovator unless you're a huge innovator. You're not okay. successful unless you're selling to massive organizations. But,
sure.
The world's made up of individual people, and there's lots of room to be selling to and working with and accomplishing things on a much smaller scale and still be doing fine.
Definitely.
So I think there's a lot that we could do here, and maybe we can circle back around and talk about this some more and start up a larger conversation. But I think this is really interesting. So let me sum up again. The title of the podcast today was Global Innovation, the Good and Bad. And I think we focused more on the good side and shifted in a slightly different direction than I was expecting, but that's fine. That's I like the way that goes. Today I was speaking with Bruno Giussani, who is based out of Switzerland. He's a writer for Business Week Online, European director for the TED conferences, author of several books, public speaker, very plugged in to a lot that's going on out in the world. His blog is over at www.lunchoverip.com, and he covers these topics very heavily there, so I recommend that you pop over there to see what he's looking into lately. Hey, Bruno, thanks so much for your time today. I think it was fascinating, and I would love to circle back around and keep this conversation going, and maybe we could tie in some of our mutual friends and see what else we can do.
Absolutely, anytime.
All right. Thank you.